I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard, and I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down, really. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special little one-off core, a little bonus content for you out there. Now, you may have noticed on the show that me and John and Bo talk a lot about the video game, the hot, nobody can stop playing it, sitting on the toilet phone game known as Marvel Snap. Everybody loves it, and it's all some of us can talk about on this show. But even with all of that, even with all of our fresh new experience with the game Marvel Snap, we don't have the knowledge that my guest does. He being my one of my favorite co-hosts on this show, you know, as The Morning Stream, and also on FilmSack. It's Brian Ibbett, everyone. Hi, Brian.
Hello. I'm sitting on the toilet right now.
Oh, good. Yeah. Fantastic. Now, this is interesting because you're a dude what played the beta in the earliest days, like at the minute you could get it,
first
you
week.
Played it.
Yeah.
Now, did you do one of those? Remind me, where you went out to some other country's app store or something?
No. For the original beta, all I had to do was have an Android tablet or an Android phone, and so I actually had a combination of an Amazon Fire tablet and BlueStacks to get into the beta. But then once the iOS version was available, that's where it was available first. Was in Philippines or something, and I actually already had a Philippines.
probably for the Apple last account. Marvel thing that was available on.
I think so. Yeah. Actually, I think it was. I think it was the because there's another Marvel card game for a while. I can't remember what that one was called, but it was also very similar in style, where it was each player taking turns playing a card as opposed to simultaneous like Snap. But
right.
Very similar in style, with power and energy and cards with special abilities and things like that.
See, that was interesting because it felt like that was not a mistake, but like a temporary thing for them.
Because it was huge outside of the U.S. and it never made it, like never got officially released in the U.S. And I don't know if there was some licensing reason that it was locked out, but... I still have that game on my iPad. I haven't played it in a while, but
do you think it has anything Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that Snap was on the horizon? There was a lot of like excitement about that, especially in the States, and they wanted to bank that or something.
I don't know, because this came out so far before Snap was even mentioned, was even teased. You know, it would have to have been under the radar, Snap reaching out and saying, hey, reaching out to Marvel and saying, we're developing this game, can you please prevent any other card games? But it would have had to do that 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Which they easily could have, because there's a lot of development, I'm sure, that went into this, and it shows.
Well, you're a guy that if somebody at Marvel says, "Hey, we're making a thing," you're usually there. Whatever it is.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah. Whether it's a television show or a movie or a card game, a physical card game, whatever it may be, you're
anything
you're
but all Funko about Pops. It. That's about it. That's where I draw the line.
Yeah. Draws the line of Funkos, which is right to do, by the way.
That's an easy line to draw.
Yeah. You're doing the Lord's work there. But when this came out, obviously, you know, Brian's a gamer in general. You played a lot of Hearthstone. You knew mm-hmm. about the lineage of Second Dinner.
Ben Brode and
Ben Brode and all of them. So you're aware of the pedigree going into it. Without all of that, though, this would have been something you were excited about regardless, because hey, it's a Marvel thing, right? You're always into
that. For sure. If this had been any other property, I mean, DC, I probably still would have picked it up and tried to get in the beta and tried to play it, just because of, you know, I like games that don't require me to sit down for an hour, 45 minutes of which are cutscenes that I have to make my way through to get 15 minutes of gameplay. Cause I have short little spurts of game time.
Sure.
I don't get the kind of, like, there's always prep for a music show, Soundography or Coverville or whatever.
Right.
There's the family obligations, things like that. So I don't get the kind of large swaths of time that would take to play an in-depth game. So hearing about a game where each match is like 3 minutes, or 4 minutes, sign me up.
You're what I call hardcore casual or casual hardcore, which means that you've got casual time to play, but when you play, you take it pretty seriously. And this is a game where I don't know how you would describe a game like this being maxed out, or you've kind of done it all, or in this case, mm-hmm. have all the cards, but you've done that. You're the only person I know of that's got every single thing.
Right.
Do you know what that represents in time? Like, is there a way to quantify that and say, oh, it took me this long to do this?
Oh, you know, I probably would be very sad if I learned how much time. Because, I mean, there'll be times that I'll have the game, like the game will be open while I'm working on something else, and it'll just be sitting there cycling through its little, here's the current featured location, and oh, Star-Lord's telling you to place cards where you think the player is going to play them, that sort of thing.
Right.
But maybe not exactly involved playing it. I would be interested to see how many matches I've played, and there's probably some metric somewhere that I can find that shows me.
They got like a slash played in the game or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. But currently my collection level is sitting at 4,189. I do have all of the first three pools or series of cards, but nothing from four or five yet, which just got dropped today that you can get through the collection shop.
Can you describe for people who are maybe less familiar with the game how the seasons work? Because they're short. They don't feel like normal seasons of 2 months, 3 months, whatever.
It's just a month-long season, and that's the one thing I do pay for without fail in the game is the season pass. Listen, there's developers on the other side of this thing. I don't have to, it's not hard at all for me to justify spending $10 a month on supporting the developers and getting something in the process. This month happened to be a great Black Panther card, but for 1 month, it's a season. You go up the ladder, the competition ladder. So your level, right now, my current level happens to be level 42.
Oh, hey.
Something about you.
Baby. That's right.
and it's because I'm stubborn with a lot of the decks I play. I know that there are better decks that I've made that I could play and probably go further up the ladder, but there's more fun ones that I want to play, and we can even speak to that in a minute or two. But and I probably don't retreat as often as I want, as often as I should, because I want to see some of the payoffs of the decks that I play all the way to the end.
Do you find that as a mechanic out. a little bit strange that retreating, like in poker and folding, it's actually not a negative thing. It's literally something you want to actually know when to fold them and when to hold them, basically.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, and you can know fairly early on if the cards you're drawing are going to get you to the combination that you need for the archetype of the deck that you've built. Mm. You'll know early on if you've got, you know, a good portion of those cards. And if you don't, get out while it's cheap. And I'll easily, as soon as my opponent snaps against me, I'll really take a hard look and say, do I think I've got enough to win? And if I'm not, if I'm not sure, if I'm not 80% sure or higher, then I'll drop out and just take the one cube cost as opposed to a two or a four.
It really does flip the script on the hasty exit element of gaming.
Yeah.
Most games, card games or otherwise, where mm-hmm. if somebody bails, it's almost mm-hmm. always 100% a negative experience. And in this case, they've like turned that and said, no, what if it was a strategic thing that actually
for sure
meant you were a good, well-rounded player and knew when to pull the plug. I think that's a interesting innovation in this mm-hmm. game, for sure.
It really is. And it adds an extra layer of thought. You know, there's the whole planning of like, all right, I'm playing a Heimdall move deck. And so I really want to have a lot of cards that benefit from moving cards around Kraven and Vulture and multiple man and things like that. But then you also have this aspect of, you know, literally 40% of the games you play, probably you should retreat from.
Sure.
It's kind of similar to the poker thing or even, you know, Perfect Strategy in blackjack has you doing a surrender, which is very similar to this in that you get half your bet back. Mm. If you draw 16 to the dealer's 20 or to the dealer's 10 with a face down card, Perfect Strategy says, yeah, you surrender on those. And a lot of casinos offer it and a lot of people don't do it. And I don't do it because it's like, no, I'm going to try and win this one with a 16.
Yeah. They want you to do that, right? The house wants you to.
They want you to do that. Yeah, totally do. Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you, okay. I asked this question of John and Bo and they're not here to defend themselves, but, they didn't think that this game had legs in terms of, an esport style game, a game that you would really want to get into and watch playoffs for, the way Hearthstone and other games have benefited that way. Magic the Gathering, you know, another good example, both physical and digital competitions. Do you, my feeling was, given the similarities to the way poker plays out, mm-hmm. and poker is a very popular spectator sport.
Yeah.
Why not this? What's your take on that, I guess?
I disagree. Yeah, I think I've watched, you know, one of the people that I watch on YouTube is a guy named Jeff Hoogland. And he's very entertaining in his delivery of games and the way he talks about the opponents when they're playing him makes me never want to watch him play me and be like, okay, well, you're about to get smashed by Dr. Doombot. You know? his delivery. Thanks for the cubes. It's entertaining as heck watching his games because there are many random elements that make it not feel like all right, I'm playing this deck. This comes out on turn three. This comes out on turn four and I instantly win. Obviously you've got your random draw of your 12 cards and how those are going to come out. You've got the randomness of the locations, which, you know, I've played games where I had a great, great first hand, but two of the three locations are ones I couldn't play into because either I was locked out of that zone or my cards would be destroyed as soon as I play them in another zone. Yeah. So it's like all of a sudden you have to shift your thinking like, okay, I've got one place I can play this. How does my strategy change? And then you've got the randomness of just some of the cards. Jubilee randomly pulling a card from your deck. Lockjaw swapping out one of your cards that you play in that location with another card from your deck. Or Dr. Octopus randomly pulling as many cards from your opponent's hand into that lane.
Sure. Because he's got those big arms, you know, that's what he does.
He's got those big arms and it could really instantly screw you or it could like completely obliterate his hand if he's not prepared for it.
Yeah.
And those random things I think are what would make this super cool to watch for esports. And I'd be up for watching a cool tournament, you know, online tournament.
And it does seem like with the legacy of Hearthstone and Second Dinner, the developer and Ben Brode, these guys who understand how to build a card game that is meant for both just players and also for spectators. I don't see why they won't at some point. It may not be a thing they wanted to do at launch. It's a lot to manage.
Sure. Yeah.
They're not the biggest company in the world, but they, you know, they get this amazing license. So I could see maybe, actually, do we know, have they said anything that you're aware of?
They haven't said anything about, because we will have the ability soon to do pick a player, you know, play against your friends and things like that.
Yeah.
But there's nothing said about kind of an observation mode that would allow you to kind of watch two players play. And they haven't said anything about any sort of like official online tournaments, but man, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see us do a Frog Pants tournament where,
oh, in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Once they do the, you can play against your friends. We totally should.
My guess is all of this kicks off when the desktop versions are done. That's when I think this will be a thing.
Yeah.
So the Steam beta is coming along nicely. I know there's ways to stream phones and stuff as it is now, but mm-hmm. when that becomes, you know, hey, I'm on Steam and I have the game, I think that changes a lot.
Yeah, and they have to figure out a way to do it to where the cards your opponent has, maybe, you know, on those streams, maybe you can't see hidden stuff so that you can't cheat and just watch somebody's stream to see what they have. I mean, there's got to be a way to do it in this competition observer mode that doesn't allow you to help one player.
Totally agree. So you mentioned it earlier. I definitely wanted to touch on this. You prefer fun decks over decks you know are min-max to win. And a lot of players, you know, a lot of us are encouraged to min-max. We go to websites, we find out the best decks, whatever the card game is, and then we just plow ahead thinking this is going to get us where we want to be for the season. And that's probably true from some sort of average point of view, but I like this idea that there are decks that are still viable that are just fun.
They're so fun.
And you prefer to play that way. That's obviously a player choice you're making, but do you, in this game, is that an easier proposition, or do you feel better about your decision to use a more fun deck than you say would in Hearthstone, where you know what the min-max is or whatever?
You know, it's one of those things that you can just balance really easily, right? Have a deck with the, you know, the current metas in there, the Hela deck, the what's Nova Destroyer deck, Killmonger deck. But then also have some of these fun ones so that as you're playing those, you know, the ones I play that are fun are those kind of casino decks. It's like playing Lockjaw and Jubilee and pulling two random cards out of a deck that I've built to have a lot of small cards and then a lot of huge cards that can dominate a game if they come out correctly.
Right.
And you can instantly see, oh, yeah, did not pull good cards. I'm going to retreat, or I'll wait until my opponent snaps or turn six and I'll retreat. And if you have a bunch of those losses, it's so easy balance-wise to just say, okay, now I'll play Hela deck or Killmonger deck or whatever and move my way back up the ladder a little bit with the min-max deck so that I can have some fun with the fun deck and do a little gambling.
How much does the change in, you know, they have these events and parts of the season where the middle, what do you call that stuff? Just areas?
Zones? The locations.
Locations. Yeah. When those locations get changed on you, how much does that fluster up what you plan on doing?
It actually makes me concentrate on a deck that can benefit from that. So for 24 hours, I think the current one is the Throne Room. So cards here with the highest power have their power doubled. So instantly you start thinking of like, all right, how can I build a card to take advantage of this location, which will come up in 40% of the games you play for the next 24 hours? That's the math. It's not guaranteed to come up, but there's a higher probability of that one coming up. So obviously Black Panther, which already doubles his power, so this would quadruple his power if you can get him out there. And keep in mind that as soon as a card comes in that's bigger, it will take away your doubled power and give it to the other card that has more power. Only one card or only the top cards will get that double. So you start thinking about these decks that can take advantage of that. And I love it because it adds one more challenge separate from just playing a game. You know, you get your missions, you've got these extra little locations that you got to focus on, and that gives a lot of variety and excitement to a game that could just be, all right, playing against a random player. Next game, playing against a random player, and that would get really, really dull really quick.
Yeah, it would pretty fast. All right, final question. This is more of an aesthetic thing, but since you and I are both appreciators of art, certainly we like comics and all that sort of thing.
Yeah,
favorite variants and least favorite variants of the cards. Because this is one of its important factors and draws for a lot of players, is that I'm going to get the entire collection of every Spider-Man they give me or whatever. So where do you land on that on both sides?
Oh, I love this question because least favorite variant is such an easy choice for me. I hate the pixel variants. They're so lazy. It's like saying, all right, let's take a good piece of artwork and now let's put it in Photoshop and turn it into 8-bit. It's like, oh, what a. And so you can look in my deck and those are the ones I haven't even boosted or anything like that.
They're all framed still. Those that you're never gonna, they're never even gonna be out of their frames.
Yeah, right. They're still in gray.
Yeah,
still,
screw those guys.
No shiny logo. None of that stuff has been happening to that. Yeah. Favorite variants, and I've been trying to, this is where like I keep saving up the gold from doing the season rewards and the the weekly rewards. That's where my gold gets stocked up. And as soon as I see a card done by Scotty Young, I instantly buy it. I have an entire, like, basically, I think there's only 3 or 4 Scotty Young cards that I don't have, but I've built a deck that's all Scotty Young cards. That is the only reason to play it, is to show your opponent that you have all the Scotty Young cards, because there's no synergy between the cards. Yeah. A couple of those cards could come out and destroy other cards that you've put out for no reason.
Yeah. If you do not know Scotty Young's art and his work, go look at, I mean, any comic
just
book he's worked
Google
on.
Scotty Young with a K, S-K-O-T-T-I-E. Mm-hmm. And I have a collection of Marvel Made pins by Scotty Young. He basically makes what would look like little children versions of all the major superheroes and villains. But to call it just that is...
It's underselling
does
it.
Him a disservice.
I agree. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he is one of the most unique artists working, period. It's very, he's very interesting. Okay, that's cool. So no, screw you, pixels.
Exactly.
I love pixel art, but I'm not, I get why that's a lot of players have said this. You're not the only one. They're just that pixel stuff, I don't need that. But you know, it doesn't mean you don't like pixel art.
The only way I ever get those is, when they come up in the collection caches. There's another artist that does very cool, simple stylized lines. And I sent you his version of Wong, the Doctor Strange, I think the next Nick Fury of the MCU.
Oh, 100%. That guy, Wong. he's the John Ratzenberger of the MCU.
He appears in series that you haven't started watching yet, in very clever ways. But his art style, and I don't know who the artist is on this, but he captured, with 5 lines, captured the look of Benedict Wong, the actor who plays Wong in the MCU, so perfectly that I actually did have to spend, I did spend some of my gold on that, and it wasn't even a Scotty Young card because it was so good.
Yeah, the focus and the effort to bring all this art to the forefront of the game and not just make it an afterthought or just, you know, it's just basic art, so you have art in the game, but instead it's like a huge part of what you're working toward, I think maybe is my favorite thing about the game.
It really is.
Hopefully everybody out there enjoyed this conversation. If you'd like to hear more of this sort of thing, let us know. In the meantime, Brian Dibbitt, of course, can be found at the venerable long-running podcast called Coverville, where it's all about music and covers all of the time. Plus, many other shows. Do you want to, anything else you want to mention in particular?
Let's promote, obviously TMS is easy to promote because we're both here, but let's promote Soundography, Crash Course in Music One Band at a Time. Hammond and I, for an entire week, listen to an entire artist or musician's catalog from start to finish, and then... and then talk about at the end of the week to say what the highs of their music were, the lows, and things like that, to just basically give people recommendations on, hey, do the greatest hits and then do these other 6 tracks or whatever. And that's been a lot of fun.
Nice. Check that out along with everything else linked over at coverville.com as well. And Brian makes a ton of great content, so make sure you check it out. Of course, TMS is great. And if you listen to FilmSack, you're already one of our friends and you know it. Okay.
Of course, FilmSack, yes.
Yeah, there you go. So that'll do it for this special one-off. May all your cards be 3D, and we'll see you next time.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.